You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, defriended by Maryland Governor Larry Hogan on Facebook, we'll discuss the intersection of social media, free speech, and political participation. But first, a group of Howard University students protested in response to a visit by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. The students want more notification about campus visits by Trump administration officials. They also wish to ban President Trump from visiting the historic black university altogether. All of this just weeks before the school's 150th anniversary. So, and how will Howard honor its historical legacy? Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick joins us now to discuss all of this. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
If you have questions or comments for Dr. Frederick, give us a call at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. How do you think universities should handle campus visits by controversial figures? 800-433-8850. A group called the HU Concerned Students protested on campus after learning of that visit by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. You have since met with the students and you're addressing their concerns. What is the conversation you're having with the student about that visit and possible visits by administration officials?
Yeah, the first conversation, quite frankly, was to clarify their list of demands, which included, as you just articulated, banning Mr. Trump from campus, as well as not inviting him, how we engage with cabinet secretaries, and I think more broadly as well, not accepting further federal dollars from the Trump administration, et cetera. You know, to put all of these in context, the first thing is academic freedom requires that we have engagement of those that we don't agree with or with whom we have a different perspective and point of view. I've also met with other students who have come forward, other groups who are concerned that these demands are also not in line with what they value in coming to Howard University, where they feel that a discussion should take place around all kinds of issues and values. And I still feel very strongly about that. That's the Howard University I met in August 1988, and it's the Howard University I intend to leave when I stop being the president of the university. I think it's the right thing to do. We have to engage any and everyone. The second thing, which I think is very important, this concept that federal dollars belongs to the president and the president is providing those dollars in return as hush money, as it were, I think is also a very foreign concept to me. The fact of the matter is that the federal coffers are filled because of tax dollars that we all pay, as well as because of what slaves and our ancestors did to build this country. And I think that we have a right to it, as anyone else does. And I think the investment that this country has received on the federal appropriation that is given to Howard University is one that we all need to be proud of, and is one, quite frankly, that they need to double down on in terms of that investment, especially in times like these where you want certain types of change. Howard University needs to be at the forefront of producing the young minds that would produce that kind of change. So I also see that as a very foreign concept as well.
Well, let's talk about that, because Howard is in a special place with regard to its relationship with the federal government. Howard and Gallaudet are two line items on the federal budget, the only universities like that. You have said that the federal funds represent more than 80% of current revenue sources at Howard. What does that mean in terms of relationships that you have to maintain with the federal government?
Yeah, the primary relationship that I have to maintain with the federal government is one of what I like to characterize as engagement, that they are clear as to what the return on that investment is. That engagement does not result in any compromising of any principles that we at Howard University hold dear to. I have never met with a Republican or Democratic senator, congressperson, cabinet member in the prior administration when I became president, and in this administration thus far, who was asking me to do anything at all that I would feel uncomfortable with. The Secretary of Education, the office contacted my office for a visit soon after her confirmation. And that engagement, again, was, I think, a positive one for Howard University. She wanted to know about public school students who attend Howard University, what percentages. She wanted to know what kinds of things those students go on to achieve, how well-prepared we find them to be, and how well-prepared our students are when they finish as graduates. I think she was able to learn a lot about HBCUs and the impact that we have Because although we represent only about 3 to 4% of institutions in higher ed, we award 22% of the bachelor's degrees given, and some 30-something% of the bachelor's degrees given in STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math, to African Americans. So she understood the outweighed impact that we have, and I think it's important for us to have that type of dialogue anytime we have an opportunity. Those who went before me really cherished that engagement. The first African-American president, Mordecai Wyatt Johnson, wrote very frequently about any opportunity he had to interact with a president or cabinet members or Congress to make his case for Howard University and to increase that funding to the university. He relished it, and I think that that still is germane today.
Well, to what extent do you think the Howard University concerned students represented majority sentiments on the campus? We visited the campus to ask students how they felt about Trump administration officials visiting campus. So let's hear first from Howard University junior Benzel Lang. Please put on your headphones.
I just feel like they don't really have a genuine interest in the students here or the people around this campus. It just feels like it's more of a thing for show than a genuine interest in the people here.
And now here is freshman Ty Hubbard.
I understand that it's policy and it's something that the government does all the time. Like Obama staff came on staff and came on campus, and like all the other president's staff came on campus. So if it's just something that the government is doing as policy, I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that. But if it's just something Trump's trying to do, I mean, he's trying to come on campus for any reason, then I guess I would rather that not happen.
Do you think students need more clarity about the relationship between Howard and the federal government?
Oh, definitely. I think the larger community of Howard University needs that as well, because I don't think it's clear to them, despite the engagement over the from the very founding of the university, what that engagement has been. 17 men founded Howard University, led by General Oliver Otis Howard, who was at the time ran what was the then version of the Freedmen's Bureau. And that's how the university was funded from its very beginning in 1867. So that engagement with the federal government is one that goes back to the very inception of the university some 150 years ago. The engagement of cabinet members or any political officials runs the gamut. We had Senator Rand Paul come to the campus for an engagement, did not really engage privately with officials or students, but had a town hall. And I think subsequently he admitted that he missed the mark. He should have had a different kind of engagement. But I think, again, all of those things we need to continue to do because that's who we represent. How the engagement takes place, the setting, who's involved, all of those things I think are up for discussion, and I'm happy to have that conversation. But I think setting a precedent of banning any specific official from speaking on a university campus, which seems to be a thing that occurs all around the country, regardless of how much you disagree with what they have to say, I think is unfortunate. The other thing is, even if they may be in a minority, the folks who are supportive of that particular agenda and do want to hear and see those officials as well, I think it denies them that right as well, regardless of the fact that they may be in the minority. And later on, as part of the discussion, the students talk about underrepresented folks on campus. An underrepresented group on campus are the College Republicans,
who started up again in November of last year on the campus of Howard University. And presumably the College Republicans would like to invite guests there also. We did ask a couple of students if they should have a say in who visits campus, and we had two responses. Here's freshman Tatiana Lee.
Yes, we should have a right because we have to live here ultimately. Like, the administration, they can go home. They get to go home. We live here, though. So we have to deal with whoever they bring in.
And then there is another student who is Talisha. I forget Talisha's last name, but let's hear
this.
Talisha,
our campus. Howard University was the hub for, you know, the civil rights movement a couple decades ago. And so I feel like we still should have a big say in what happens on our campus.
Well, of course, if that individual is invited by a campus group like the College Republicans, then your argument would be they should have a say too.
Absolutely, we have to support that, regardless of which group it is, regardless of whether it's a group with a religious affiliation. I mean, we have to support that. That's the part of the discourse, the very engagement we talk about around civil rights occurred on Howard's campus. At the same time, there was conversation and interrogation and investigation about faculty members who were deemed communists, and we had to resist that. We still had to make sure that we were engaging on all fronts in order to make sure that the dialogue was fruitful. And I also feel strongly that when these things do occur, the format in which it occurs is important. Students have to protest if they disagree with what a speaker has to say and what a speaker does, and so we encourage student activism. I think that's one of the calling cards of Howard University. But what I strongly think is will be deleterious to Howard's mission is not engaging with anyone that we simply disagree with what they are about. I think that I don't think that that should happen on a university campus, and definitely not on Howard's campus. There are too many people who've been to Howard who did not have a voice and were seeking a voice, and people suppressed their ability to have a voice. And for us to do that to others, I think, is not a good idea.
But how do you walk that line between Howard's broader participation historically in the civil rights movement and an administration, and in this case, a Congress, that has been accused of being involved in the suppression of voting rights, that has been accused of trying to suppress immigration from certain kinds of countries? They would argue that when Howard meets with these officials, your interest should not simply be the narrow financing of Howard University. There's a broader interest here about promoting the interests of the African-American community that Howard has been involved in for a long time.
When we engage, it's never simply about finances. The discussion I had with the Secretary of Education, very little of it was about finances. I don't even think that we discussed our federal appropriation at length. Our conversation was about making sure that access to education was available to everyone, and why a Howard University was outpunching its weight in terms of providing that access to those who otherwise wouldn't have that opportunity. And I think that that data was critical for her to hear. We have 60% of my undergrad students are Pell Grant eligible. AU, Georgetown, and GW have rates of 11, 14, and 18%. We are in a totally different circumstance. So that access, making sure Pell Grants are available in the summer, all of those are things that we think are important. But I think the philosophy of what public schools can do in this country, we also spoke about the middle school on our campus, which is a chartered middle school. So absolutely, the conversation is way broader than that with any conversation with any of those folks. And I think to your point, to really make it clear, if an administration is going to put forward policies that are going to hurt communities we are concerned about, I think we have a duty to let them know about it and let them know about it directly.
The students have demanded that the university declare itself a sanctuary campus, with a campus that has traditionally attracted immigrants from all over the world. What does that mean exactly to you?
Yeah, and this is one of the things where, you know, I think sometimes buzzwords get into our lexicon and we use them in a way that's not clear to everyone. You know, a sanctuary campus is not like a sanctuary city. And I think we've unfortunately just tried to use the same lexicon. In a city, you can enact certain policies and procedures that would allow you to do certain things around being a sanctuary city, around immigration issues. On a campus, that issue is totally unclear as to how you do that. There's no university campus in the city that is declared a sanctuary campus for that reason. That's a very difficult definition to come by. What we have done and done consistently, we had two students who needed assistance getting from one of the seven countries that were listed on the ban. We hired an outside lawyer. That lawyer was able to meet the students upon arrival at Dulles and help them get into the country. We've arranged for that type of private counsel, confidential counsel to students who may have immigration issues, to be available to those students in the event that they need any access or help to any legal action that may be needed. And then around the issue of, you know, travel, outside of the issue of travel ban, but in terms of Dreamers and those types of things, we've supported those students all along at Howard University, and we will continue to do that.
An executive order on HBCUs, it's my understanding, is expected from President Trump pretty soon. What are your expectations? What are you hoping for?
You know, I have to be quite honest. I'm not sure that I have very high expectations of this. I think executive orders, and based on what I've seen already from the White House, these are not very effective in terms of producing the type of impact that you need. And what HBCUs need today is to make sure that they have the support, financial and otherwise, to close the gaps that exist because of the student body that they're primarily targeted to support. And I think that that's a very, very difficult gap to close. I don't see any executive order fulfilling that completely. So my expectations, I would say, are, you know, tempered by that fact.
Well, you stated in several interviews that you'd like to continue to find ways to diversify Howard's funding and not rely as heavily on the federal government as you do. Do you have a strategy to address that?
Absolutely. Howard University is a private university. As you stated earlier, it's one of only two non-military institutions in the country that appears in the federal budget. And I think that a day of independence for Howard where not being a line item in the budget that is at the whim and fancy of Congress on an annual basis is in Howard's best interest. So we have embarked upon a program to diversify the revenue stream that includes monetizing real estate assets, of which we have significant holdings on campus. We've looked at that. Next week I will present to the board a program that will make it easier for students to graduate early or on time for the purpose of, again, decreasing their costs. We believe that we can create a three-year program so we can decrease 25% of student costs. The program that we will put forward next week will involve students being able to take 42 credits between the fall, spring, and the summer, with the summer being free in terms of credits. So if they've taken 18 and 18 in the fall and the spring, they'll take 6 credits in the summer without paying tuition fees. And we think all of these things will lead to better outcomes. We have to do a better job around philanthropy. So since I've been the president, we started at above 4% alumni participation giving rate. We're on track to be between 12 and 15% this year, which would mark a 300% increase in the rate since I started as president. I think all of those things are things that we must do. We must have a capital campaign like most private universities do today to fund the needs of the university. And then ultimately, when you talk about diversifying the revenue stream, not being as dependent on tuition is one of the goals as well. I would love every Howard student who is Pell Grant eligible to attend Howard without taking out loans, where we supplement the rest of their expenses. And so we're working on that as well. But that means that we have to increase the endowment. Although it's the largest among HBCUs, it pales in terms of who we're competing with, right?
In terms of the next issue, I do have to mention that we are in the public broadcast family together, so to speak. The university participated in the Federal Communications Commission broadcast incentive auction, which was conducted during the course of the past 12 months or so, but Howard University voluntarily withdrew from the auction. It was a conversation we had a debate on this show some time ago, with one person agreeing with staying in the auction, another person saying you should withdraw. Why did you decide to withdraw?
We withdrew because I didn't think that the value that it was we got to was a value that was representative of what I see the value of the spectrum that we currently are licensed to broadcast over at. I didn't think it was worth it.
But why did it take so long?
Because that's the process. There were several rounds in the auction, and that's the process that we participated in.
But there was significant speculation, maybe uninformed speculation, that Howard could get as much as $500 million or more for the station. That did not turn out to be realistic.
Right, but that is where the initial evaluation that the FCC did put out was. It was at $461 million, and in some prior iterations of it, it was at $600 and something million, which I think it was significant value and represented closer to the value of the station. So I think taking anything substantially less than that would be, you know, not getting the correct value for the spectrum.
In September, you announced that the Howard University Hospital became profitable with a $4.3 million in income. And the Washington Business Journal reported that that fact that you have now turned a profit could make the hospital a more attractive takeover target in the future. Is this something that you're thinking about doing?
Yeah, that's correct. In September, we reported 4.3. Our audited financials have shown that that has now grown to about $16 million in profit from that prior year because of some adjustments on receivables. So we had a very, very good year last year. We are on track to have a very good year this year as well. And yes, we are continuing to look for an appropriate buyer for the hospital.
But you trained in this hospital. You studied in this hospital. Yeah, you ran this hospital. Why do you want to now sell the hospital?
Well, I've also had a major operation in the hospital. My daughter has also been born in that hospital, if you want to take it there. But all of those are emotional ties to the hospital. The fact of the matter is that the merger and acquisition business around hospitals today is such that the operating a small hospital with 200 active beds or less in this environment is not a very profitable business. And unless we can commit to investing capital budget of anywhere from $30 to $50 million a year in the hospital, we would not be able to grow and or compete, especially given the other hospitals in the city. Georgetown and GW recognized this many years ago, and they both sold their hospitals and have hospitals that work pretty well. MedStar runs Georgetown, and Universal Health Services runs GW, and both of those hospitals do very well as a result of that external capital investment, and that's what a Howard University Hospital would need to thrive.
Sentiment aside, here is Yvonne at Howard University. Yvonne, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I would like to address the fact that you tried to compare the federal appropriation to reparations. First of all, one thing about reparations is if they were reparations, they would be given to every black person in America. And as a student, I've addressed, like, the administration has consistently taken steps to separate itself from the black community. So these are not reparations, especially when they come along with things that prevent you from helping the black community. We're asking that you make this campus a sanctuary campus. You can't do that, according to you. You said this yourself when you met with the students of Concerned Students, 1867. You said that you couldn't make this a sanctuary campus because of the federal appropriation. I don't even understand why you tried to make the comparison between federal appropriations and reparations. And then there's another thing.
Well, allow me to have him address one point at a time.
So let me first address the first point. I never compared it to reparations. My point was that the federal funds that come through the federal government is not President Trump's purse pocket. It's not his wallet. We have to get away from the fact that these are seen as handouts by most people. I disagree with that. My point was that the federal coffers have swollen around, whether it's slavery in the past or tax dollars today, all of which we pay. We have a right to those dollars, and I think we have to make an argument that these dollars are well spent at Howard University, and the return on investment that the country gets as a result of that investment is a return on investment that I think is appropriate. I think that any stipulation that comes with them that compromises what we do is something that we need to look at. And I'm also not hesitant to say that that's something that we should walk away from if, as a community, we feel that the stipulations that anyone puts on those dollars compromises our principles, including being a sanctuary campus. There's not a legal standing that puts us in that place. And we do agree to comply with all federal laws around our federal appropriation. And those are things that not just include immigration issues, but they include other issues as well for which we're audited on an annual basis.
Yvonne, we're running out of time very quickly, but you had a second point to make.
We'll be like the ones we had with Rand Paul.
Could you repeat that question, Yvonne?
He's making, it's just not, he's on the air and he's lying. He said he thinks that the funds are used well by Howard University, yet we have people in the quadrangle, which is a dorm here on campus, and pipes are exploding inside of their dorms. We have slow that he's going to shut down and sell instead of fixing it up when we already have a shortage of housing here on campus. We have towers where there's things wrong there. We have things.
Well, it seems that you're talking about a number of infrastructure problems, so allow me to have the president.
Yeah, so we have $750 million of deferred maintenance on the campus. She's absolutely right. We also have $30 million of uncollected tuition from students from the fall and the spring semester. So we do have a financial gap that we need to close. in order to be able to invest in the infrastructure of the campus. And so she's absolutely right. Where we charge our tuition is about half where the private universities in the city charge. And what we collect is significantly less because we have an outsized number of Pell Grant eligible students. So the ability to invest in the campus does require that we diversify the revenue stream, as we suggested. So yes, the federal appropriation accounts for 38% of the operating budget. But when you look at what we need in terms of giving and philanthropy, that's an area that we obviously have to expand significantly. And so we are taking steps in order to do that. If we raise $14 to $50 million, which is what we did last year, that's nowhere close to the $50 to $75 million a year we need to be raising. And so we are out making efforts to make sure that we close that financial gap as well. And for the uncollected tuition, we recognize that raising tuition is not a strategy that is going to effectively close the gap as well. So that's why we're diversifying the revenue stream as well.
Final question. Howard will celebrate 150 years on March 2nd, a huge accomplishment for a storied institution. When you look at the amount of change this institution has experienced or influenced from the Jim Crow era to the Obama presidency, I guess that's something you'll be articulating about the school's impact on Black history and American history. But you'll also be looking at a future at Howard. And you lived in the Towers, the residential dorm, as a student. Now there's a Whole Foods slated to open near the Towers. There's a new movie theater on V Street. With so much development around the campus, how can the university, on the one hand, maintain its historic cultural footprint and educational footprint, and on the other hand, maybe take advantage of this development?
Well, again, I think this is one of those issues where we have to make sure that we have the right balance. We have a Barry Place project that's taking place opposite the Towers, and in there, there'll be a certain percentage of the units that would be rent controlled, as an example, to allow the citizens who live in that area now to be able to afford the housing in that area. At the same time, I think the other projects, the caller mentioned the Slower Residence Hall, which is in LaDroit Park. And so that's an area we are going to close and look at an opportunity for a project that, again, would allow us to participate, to bring the revenue stream. But at the same time, we have the capacity to put stipulations on what that looks like to allow, whether it's our graduate students or faculty, to have a certain percentage of those units available to them as well. And I think that tension is going to continue. The city has changed dramatically over the course of time, from when I came in 88, when I look at Florida Avenue as an example, to what it is today. And I think we have to recognize that. We also have to make sure that the historical impact is not just a physical one, but it's reflective in the other things that we want to do. The students express an interest in, for instance, having a Kwame Ture community center. I think that's a great idea, and that's one that we will look into in terms of putting into that very same neighborhood as well.
Kwame Ture, the former Stokely Carmichael who attended Howard University and was a leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, who, like Dr. Frederick, was born in Trinidad in the West Indies. What happened to the plans for the Howard Town Center? Is that still on the drawing board?
It's still on the drawing board. It has been in litigation. We expect a court date around May. In which we chose a developer. That developer did not meet the requirements of the contract, so we dissolved the contract with that developer. This was prior to my becoming president, and that person has pursued appeals after the judgment was awarded in our favor.
So that's in court right now.
Process. Correct.
Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick is president of Howard University. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, defriended by Maryland Governor Larry Hogan on Facebook, we'll be discussing the intersection of social media, free speech, and political participation. I'm Kojo Namdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.